Charlie and a few of their friends chug a couple beers and talk politics. It's better when you're two beers in.
Welcome to Two Beers In, a tipsy political roundtable. I'm your co-host, Cody Lindquist.
And I'm Charlie Todd. We are recording here in our Hell's Kitchen apartment. We have two guests tonight.
We're so excited. It's our first show back since Labor Day.
Yeah, it's been a little while. It's been since our last live show. We have an exciting announcement. We're going to be doing this podcast every week through the election.
We have committed ourselves to getting drunk once a week to talk to you about politics. And if Donald Trump wins the election, we'll probably go daily after.
We're going to go daily if Trump wins.
Or every hour. We're just going to become alcoholics.
Yeah.
And it's going to devolve into something you don't want to listen to at that point.
But we're excited. We're going to do, generally we're going to do every, we're going to record on Monday night. So the podcast should be out on Tuesdays. We might switch that to account for some presidential debates and things like that. But in general, expect a new podcast from us every Tuesday morning.
So tell your friends.
Tell your friends, subscribe on iTunes. And we've said this before, but it really helps if you give a rating. Our friend Willie Behinds gave a really nice review. So we want to thank
him. Love you.
But yeah, it does help if you give us a review and a rating. And the final bit of business up top is that we have a new live show coming up on September 26th at the UCB Theater, and it's a big one.
Yeah, because if you are as into politics as we are, you know that is the first presidential debate. So we are doing a live stream of the presidential debate
at the UCB Theater, in the East Village. The show is going to start at 8 o'clock. We're going to have a panel and some comedy bits before the debate at 9. Then we're all going to stop talking and watch the debate from 9 to 10:30, and then at 10:30 we'll all be very drunk and come back on and hopefully celebrate how wonderful Hillary was.
Yeah,
or if not, it'll
knows?
Be a depressing end of the show.
Well, I am ready to start drinking, so let's introduce
our guests.
Let's talk
about our guests. Yeah, we have our old friend of the UCB Theater, Joe Burns, is here.
He is one of the very few conservatives we know in the comedy scene.
So, and we're excited to hear his perspective. And also, we have our old friend, Zach Linder, also from the UCB Theater, from the good old days. And Zach, also a writer at WWE for quite some time, for .com.
How you doing, guys?
Pretty good.
I'm fantastic. Thanks, Charlie. I'm ready to cook, baby. Let's do it.
Nobody knows what that means.
Zach has been saying that phrase to us for a long time. We don't know what it means.
It's got a lot of likes on Facebook. A lot of likes.
Okay, so what's going to happen now? Like we do every show, we are going to pause the recording. We're going to chug two beers.
We're drinking Mermaid Pilsners from Coney Island Brewing Company tonight. And Joe is actually drinking some gluten-free beer because...
Much
he's
like libertarian Gary Johnson, I have celiac disease.
And this is a Glutenberg.
I didn't know about him.
He does.
Wow. He'd be a paleo.
Great. And much like libertarian Gary Johnson, you're very bad at geography.
Probably, yes.
All right, we're going to pause the recording. See you guys in a moment. Okay, we are back.
Hey, how you guys feeling?
I feel pretty good.
I'm belching a lot.
Well, that's very common. A lot of burping at the beginning of this podcast.
And now begins the 10-minute discussion about burping that we always have on this podcast.
Okay, so it's been a busy weekend. Hillary used the word basket of deplorables on Friday night, and we thought that was the biggest thing in the campaign. And then she
what a great phrase.
Got pneumonia, and that's now the biggest thing.
Yeah, so I
want to talk about it.
I want to talk about Sickgate first. That's what I've called it.
Sickgate.
Did you make that 16. Up?
Yep, totally made that up. I'm sure somebody else has said that, so I don't want to coin the phrase, but I didn't see it anywhere. I am the only woman on this panel, and I'm wondering...
Whoa.
I am, I know. Do you think the media coverage of her illness is insane and insanely biased? Because I, as a woman, feel that it's obvious to me how insanely biased it is. So I am the only woman, so say you agree with me.
I mean, I totally agree. I'm going to say some things less than agreeing, but I think Hillary is being held to a different standard in a lot of ways. But I think when you have someone with a history of public health incidents and that this is a demanding job, when John McCain was running.
I think that's an overstatement, by the way. A history of she had there was the blood clot, which is. A single incident. There has not been a history of health incidents.
So what's the history, Joey? What do you mean?
There was the fall, and then there was the blood clot. She is, you know, both her and Donald Trump are older.
He's older.
Yeah. Yes.
They're both
and
very
he
old.
Eats fried chicken all the time on his plane.
I don't think Hillary should be singled out, but I also think that the I don't think health is necessarily off limits. And then when you have something like this happen, it seems like you can talk about it, but you can talk about it in a sensible way.
What was your opinion, Joe, of Rudy Giuliani and Trump and alt-right people like a week ago making a big to-do over her coughs, which we now know, actually, they were somewhat right.
Yeah.
Her coughs were because she had pneumonia.
Okay, stop.
Charlie's right on that.
Listen to me. My point is that they were not somewhat right. She has a cold that turned into pneumonia or whatever. And I get that, like, talking about health is important. Sure. I mean, that was a big part of the McCain thing, right? Like, part of the reason people felt more comfortable with Obama was maybe that he didn't seem like he was going to croak, right?
Yeah, and generationally, that's a huge thing.
Exactly. But we are going up against two equally old candidates. Like, they're old. Anything could happen to either of them. I mean, they're not that old. They're not 90.
Came from an insane-looking Simpsons character of a doctor.
Sure. But the reason Hillary didn't disclose the information about being sick... And this is the big thing that they're talking about now is the media is saying that that she wasn't transparent. It's like, well, she's not transparent about it because everybody was covering it.
She didn't handle it well, though. I would agree that she's being held to a different standard, and it's fine that she has pneumonia. Pneumonia is serious. I mean, Jim Henson did die from pneumonia, so it is a serious thing, but it's treatable. Well,
there's different types of pneumonia.
Yes, there's a sliding scale. You get the Z-Pak, you'll be fine, right? But she is being held to a different standard, and that is true. But David Axelrod did have that tweet earlier today that was starting to be tweeted out by people like Kellyanne Conway were retweeting Axelrod.
Yeah, well, what the fuck did he do that tweet for?
Well, Axelrod's been a moron for years. I mean,
what was the tweet?
Axelrod posted something like, "It's not a big." I'm paraphrasing, but the point of the tweet was, "Yeah, it's not a big deal that you're sick, pretty big deal when you have all kinds of like misconceptions about your campaign.
You're right.
What kind of campaign are you running? And
Sorry.
Hillary's
no,
that, campaign.
No,
that, did,
that's not what he said. I should look it up, but keep talking.
Yes, please look it up because I'm drunk and I'm paraphrasing. But it is true that the Hillary campaign did not play this well. They were afraid about the sort of rhetoric that the alt-right was using to describe her, this conspiracy theory rhetoric about her health, and they were afraid about what the reaction would be if there was too much disclosure. Charlie, what did the tweet say?
I'll read the tweet. The tweet is, antibiotics can take care of pneumonia. What's the cure for an unhealthy penchant for privacy that repeatedly creates unnecessary problems?
But can I say this? I've been listening to the media all day talk about this. And what's frustrating to me is if she came out on Friday and said, I have pneumonia, I'm taking 4 days off, the media narrative would have been, all of these comments that Donald Trump is making, maybe there's some validity to them. Maybe she is sick. Maybe she is whatever. So she didn't want to do that, right? She was like, okay, it's pneumonia. My doctor said take some antibiotics. I'll be fine. I'll power through. I just have this one event to do. She almost passed out, which sucks. And now the media narrative is she wasn't transparent with us. It's like the media narrative was going to be against her either way. And it's so fucking frustrating that that's the thing is like, but she has a transparency issue. But,
the discussion
on Friday would have been she's about to die. Trump was right.
The shitty, terrible thing is that there have been crackpot conspiracy theories about her health for a very, very long time.
And if they didn't cover her stupid cough or her stupid coughing fit or the pillow gate or all this bullshit.
What was Pillowgate?
She uses pillows when she sits in chairs.
Well, also,
if they didn't make comments on that in the mainstream
pretty
news.
Pretty disqualifying, Charlie.
If they didn't make comments on that in the mainstream news, then she would have come out and said she has pneumonia and she's taking a couple days off. But she felt like she couldn't do that because they were making these comments about bullshit.
And also the fact of the matter is she was sick and went to work. This badass woman went, I don't know about you guys, but I don't call in sick that much to work. You go to work. You got a job to do.
I get a cold like once a year and I lose my voice. Like I can't talk for a day. So, you know, the fact that she has goddamn pneumonia and is doing three events a day.
What do you guys think about this as an idea? It's more grueling to run for president physically than it is to actually be president.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree.
I believe that.
I agree.
So on one hand, you know, I'm sure Hillary Clinton is a 68-year-old woman. That's exhausting for any 68-year-old.
Think how many gross people's hands you're shaking.
Yeah, it's...
Like, I feel like I'd be sick all the time.
And two other people in her office got pneumonia, and a bunch of others had bad colds. I mean, it's... Shit goes around.
My mom doesn't like to go to Queens.
I don't think that you can say that, you know, short of any, like, confirmed medical issue, that it disqualifies you from being president. Because we've had presidents with far worse health issues.
Oh, my gosh.
One president had a bullet in them shortly after they were elected. You know.
Kennedy had Addison's disease.
Who's that, Reagan?
Roosevelt was Harrison. Paralyzed.
Who was it that served for, like, a month?
It was the one who, I think it was Harrison, yeah. Right?
No, Garfield, right?
No, Garfield.
Garfield was shot by Gateau, right?
Oh, I don't know.
Man, I don't know.
I had enough for
don't
one
fact
joke
check
on that,
this episode.
You guys don't read the Sarah Vowell book? Come on.
I think it's the way that the media has handled this, I think, is terrible. I completely agree with you, Cody, that the fact that all of these coughs were news and the fact that they were giving daylight to all these conspiracy theories just put her in a position where she was like, God damn it. I want to go to the fucking 9/11 memorial because I'm a New York State senator. I was a New York State senator. It's really important to me. It's important for me to be there politically, but also personally,
yes,
because this is very important to historically, and I want to fucking be there, but I have pneumonia. I can't tell anybody I have pneumonia because there's these fucking crazies who are saying I'm dying.
And if she hadn't showed up for some reason, that would have been...
Yeah, it would have been...
She can't win.
It was a lose-lose situation.
She had those cool sunglasses. You see those shades?
I think those sunglasses are terrifying.
She did look like Weekend at Bernie's.
To give some real talk, and I'm the biggest Hillary fan around, but to give some real talk, she looked fucking terrible.
She did.
The sunglasses were scary as shit. She was so pale. When I look sick, I look fucking terrible too. She looked like a sick person.
You look great now.
And that fucking video of her getting into the SUV or whatever and falling is terrible, and the whole thing is fucking terrible. But she was definitely backed into a corner because of the conspiracy theories and because of the... But I do think, Cody, it's tricky because the thing that's so fucking shitty about the situation is that the conspiracy theories, which have been wrong for years about Hillary's health, were kind of right this week. Like, the 5 days ago, I was like, fucking, they're talking about a cough. Fuck these people. They're monsters. But they were right.
They were saying their cough is indicative of Parkinson's or, like, lung cancer.
But what's also ridiculous about this is by implying that Hillary is not in perfect health, they're also implying that Trump is a fucking specimen, right? Which is ridiculous, this weird orange blimp.
Trump's fandom is just entirely different in terms of their understanding of, like, what Donald Trump physically is as a human being. He's a 70-year-old guy. Have you guys seen the internet meme of Trump with a M16 on a tank and an eagle on him? Like, but there's
thankfully no.
There's a serious, like, masculine idealization of who Donald Trump is, and
right.
You know, is he that person? That's another topic. The answer is no.
Pretty sure his penis is as small as that statue characterized
to
be in the middle of.
I bet I dislike Donald Trump more than you guys because the people that agree
ruining
with
your
you,
party,
the people that agree with you. Also hate Donald Trump, whereas
right.
Some of the people that I'd be like, hey, yep, I'm on your side, they're like, yep, Mr. Trump is the right person to lead this country, and I want to blow my brains out.
So let's talk about Trump's health, and I do think that I think false equivalency is a giant problem in the media, and I think it's been a giant problem this week, and I think, you know, just all of the stories today, I was hearing it from Chris Matthews tonight, I was hearing it on Lester Holt's broadcast tonight, all of the stories are about this raises questions about transparency. This raises questions about how secretive Hillary is. Trump has done nothing. He has not released his tax returns. He's given us one doctor's note from a gastroenterologist. Am I getting that right?
Gastroenterologist.
Whatever the word is, from someone who doesn't sound like his main doctor.
Dude looks insane,
and
I love it.
The dude looks insane.
How crazy he looks.
The NBC News interview with that guy is completely insane.
Was that the guy with the accent who treated Morgan Spurlock and supersized me?
Probably.
No.
But
I think it was the same guy. hearing.
The bottom, I mean, look, to talk about what's normal, Obama and Romney gave like a page and a half letter from their doctor saying like, hey, in general, here's what's going on. Romney takes Lipitor and blah, blah, blah.
I do love that we're longing for the glory days of the political discourse of Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. Like,
but no, I'm just saying historically, presidential candidates release like a page and a half worth of here's a overview of my health.
Yeah.
McCain released a lot more because McCain was
had a lot more to release.
But Hillary was within the norm of what candidates have done in the modern era for your health records. Trump released a letter that he wrote himself and then sent it in a limousine because that's, he doesn't email things or use PDFs or even use a fax machine. He uses a limousine to get things around. So he sent a limo to this.
It's good for the environment.
Crackpot Upper East Side doctor with hair down.
Well, what does Upper East Side have to do with it? All of my doctors are on the Upper East Side.
Exactly.
You think I see a bunch of crackpots from my Crohn's disease, Charlie?
I also think that...
A lot of intestinal diseases
when both of your candidates are the same age and roughly the same health, you can't bring up health because guess what? We got ourselves into this situation. They're both old. One of them might croak.
But the whole thing of like Hillary had pneumonia on Friday and she didn't tell us till Sunday night raises questions about what it doesn't raise. It does. Okay, she took 2 days. Trump is we're over a year into him announcing he's running for president and we haven't seen actual medical
records.
We've seen a letter that he wrote and had some crazy man sign.
But they can't say he wrote it.
But he wrote it.
I know. But that's the problem is they hold Hillary to the normal. Presidential candidacy, like
weird.
Candidate standard.
Yeah,
that's. And then they just go, well, Trump, like, I don't know.
The number one thing that is pissing me off more than anything right now is that we are holding Hillary to the standard of a normal person running for president, and we are not holding
perhaps
Trump.
More scrutiny.
We are not, maybe slightly more, but let's. I'll give you that she's getting the same scrutiny as Romney or Obama or McCain. But Trump, we're just saying, like, well, he's a crazy person, so, you know, we'll let him say, we'll ask him a question about birtherism, and if he says, I don't want to talk about that because that's all you'll talk about, we'll just change the subject.
It does warm my heart a little bit to hear you guys complaining about the media because I feel like I'm talking with other Republicans right now because that has been, like, the Republican, like, internal mantra for the last,
you know,
15, 20 years.
I know,
let's,
but I
no,
think...
No, but let's but, talk to... But I want to
but
talk
it doesn't
about
have,
this.
But do you think the media has a liberal bias? Or do you think they're bad? Because I just think they're bad.
Yes and no.
And I think they have a slight conservative bias.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know that'll piss you off, but yes.
I think media draws young people who are interested in, you know...
Being on TV and wearing makeup.
Well, but also, like... But the people actually, like, doing the beat reporting, the people who are with these campaigns... if
the road warriors,
the people at BuzzFeed or Vox or at all these, you know, smaller, this new wave of political journalism, there are young people who are interested in what's happening in the world and reporting what's going on in the world and trying to use their words to make a difference.
Yeah. And they're actually doing good reporting.
And, but I think
so is Hallie Jackson.
When you take that demographic of young people who want to change the world with the work they're doing, they do skew liberal, and I don't think you can say, well, I'm going to do this reporting and completely isolate my own view. So I think there's probably an implicit bias.
I agree with that, but don't you also think that's just the fact of the matter that most people that graduate college are Democrats and most people that don't are Republicans? I know that was, like, not really fair. But
that is not fair,
but
Joe.
I said it, and I'm standing by it.
That's not fair. I think it's probably accurate. I think it's also less of a 50-50... It's like maybe 64.
They also say that you're a Democrat and then you're supposed to switch when you get married and have kids.
But honestly, the reason that Trump might win is only because of uneducated white people or non-college graduate white
people. No, that's not true. And that's I think, misinformed.
Well, that is...
What? What do you mean?
I do think that if the reason he wins, he can't just win by uneducated or low-educated.
No, another big reason that he might win is because Republicans that would normally not vote for Trump because they hate Trump so much and they say he's ruining the party cannot bring themselves to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
I know Republicans that hate Democrats, but voted for Obama in 08 because they could not stand Sarah Palin.
Okay,
it is not the same now.
So, Joe, if we may ask, as our conservative you obviously hate Trump. So who are you planning on voting for?
This is an insane inside baseball feeling, but my deep down hope is that Evan McMullen, the crazy crackpot, like, never gonna win in a million years.
But can he get on a ballot here?
So New York actually has a very active conservative party. In addition to the Republican
Party. Is that like a working families kind of thing?
Yeah, it's the same. The way New York ballots work is that you don't have to have someone explicitly from your party in the nomination. You can nominate another party's candidate. So my hope is that he somehow ends up on the ballot.
So you're voting for Donald Trump?
Wow. I've heard a lot of crazy names like David French or Gary Johnson's little friend. Well, are you not interested in Gary Johnson at all?
I was, and he just strikes me as very unserious about actually trying to make a difference, because there was an opening in this race for a center-right candidate, for the people who
I agree.
Who hated Donald Trump, who was like, what is he doing? And then who also weren't entirely sold on...
There's something wrong with Gary Johnson if he can't get 15% when Donald Trump's in the race.
Right. I think there was an opening, and Gary Johnson just took every position that would narrow his appeal.
Do you think his... lack of knowledge on what Aleppo is disqualifies him?
Yes. Some of that is because most people don't know what Aleppo is. It's a pretty small part of the wider ISIS thing. It's a part of that.
It's a big part of a presidential
But knowing the issues is a big part of it. And so...
The best part about... Let's talk about Gary Johnson, Aleppo for a second. But the best part of that is just the way he said it.
He's like, no.
This very serious... I don't know who it
was. And did you hear his justification for why he said it that way?
It was an acronym.
To be fair, it sounds like an acronym.
Give me a break.
It's on Morning Joe. I don't know who the guy was. It was some like policy expert or foreign policy expert who was interviewing him and asking what he thought about it. Just the way he goes, now what is Aleppo?
And it was on Fox and Friends, right?
No, it was Morning Joe. Then Joe goes, you're kidding, right? Wouldn't it be funny if he was like, yeah, I am.
and then Joe said, oh, that's depressing, isn't it? Or Mika said that or something.
I don't remember that.
God, I don't watch Morning Joe. But I am aware of it because of Donald Trump's insane tweets about...
Oh, the ratings are bad.
Very dumb, low-rated Morning Joe.
It's a sad show. We all know it's sad.
But Joey, do you not agree that if a... Look, either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton will become president. There is no one else who will become president. And your vote, for any third-party candidate, is not going to make any kind of a difference, no matter how much you may convince yourself that it's true. So don't you agree that if you do not vote for Hillary Clinton, that is a vote for Trump?
You asked that question to me. I think you meant to ask it to Joe.
No, I'm asking. Evan McMullen, give me a break. What is this nonsense?
Right.
Well,
hey, right.
I'm cooking, baby.
You know,
you're also speaking really loud. I'm worried about our microphone.
We were all tubers in, but also we respect and are excited that our conservative friend is here.
Respect, okay.
All right, but to ask that question in a less hostile manner.
It is not a vote for Hillary, a vote for Trump. One of the great luxuries that I have living in Brooklyn is that my vote really doesn't matter.
Right.
Because electorally,
Hillary's going to win New York
City. So let's put you on the spot. If you lived in Pennsylvania or Florida, would you vote for Hillary?
To prevent
Trump?
I've seen Hillary described as a neocon corporatist warmonger. And I think I could get behind that if I was in a swing state and really had a gun to my head.
I think this is the problem with this whole situation, is that Cody and I are so far to the left, and like we're almost settling for Hillary. I mean, I'm ready for Hillary. I love her, but I don't know. I mean,
well, this is, I think, one of the most difficult problems with Hillary. People on the left, the super far left, you know, people who supported Bernie, for instance, they say that she is corporate, that she is not a liberal, that she doesn't stand for our values, that she, is for Goldman Sachs and war. And then Republicans say she's a liberal. She is crazy woman that just wants universal health care. And so it's like, you can't have it both ways. Like, what is she?
Well,
why are we saying, like, on both sides, like, can you just pick one? Like, is she too corporate? Is she too big money, or is she the bleeding heart liberal that wants free healthcare for kids?
You know what I hear, and I'll try and calm down. I'm very worked up. I apologize. But I, when I hear stuff like, oh, she's too corporate, or she, you know what I, you know what I compare that to? I compare that to 08 and 2012 when we kept hearing about Obama. Oh, he's an elitist. That's what he is. Oh, Barack Obama. Oh, he's an elitist. Since when do we not want an elite man to be the president of the United States? That was an insult. Give me a break.
No, I agree. I think Trump criticizes Hillary in the same way. And I think that maybe that dovetails into the basket of deplorables that we want to talk about, because Trump has been out on the trail today talking about how Hillary is someone who looks down upon you.
But I look down upon the rapists that have been sent here to ruin our country. But
the thing that's deplorable. All right. So let's talk about this. On Friday night, Hillary was at a private fundraiser that was being recorded, and she knew it was being recorded.
She said 47%. Oh, sorry, last election, my bad.
Yeah, I know, but I don't think it's the same as that. She said that that half of Trump's supporters, and she apologized and took back half.
Although she might be right, because he's getting like 30, he's polling at 39, so let's say 19% of the country are terrible people.
That's possible. That's quite possible. I mean,
I'm not running for office, so I can say
I'm going to sound like a bleeding heart right now.
Great.
But I think we need to have as much charity as we can stomach to our political opponents.
Sure.
Because the way you guys see the world is clearly different than the way I see the world. And we could probably have a nice discussion about what I think about X, Y, and Z and what you guys think about it. And at some point, we're going to hit some fault lines. At some point, we're going to hit some fault lines about like, oh, I just think different than you guys do. So I don't think we should be writing off huge chunks of the population like that.
I know.
At the same time, the thing that surprised me with this election is that the crazy part of the Republican Party has been way larger than I personally thought it was.
Pandora's box has opened up and these people have come out.
And I think you have to be very careful in parsing how much legitimate grievance is there for the white, lower middle, lower class, because the last 15 years, they've been great if you've had a 401k. They have not been necessarily great if you don't.
The stock market has tripled. If you have money in the market.
Most people, their jobs are going. It's like, okay, well, yes, the employment rate is good, but those jobs are terrible. So it's like you might be employed, but you're underemployed, or your job now might have made this X amount of money and had days off, and now you're working for a fast food chain.
And I think responsible thing that we would love our political system to do is identify what is legitimate about what these people are doing in terms of voting for someone like Donald Trump, figuring out like how can we address their grievances without giving into the worst parts of their humanity and the worst parts of our country's humanity with this stuff.
I agree with that. I 100% agree with that. That not everyone that's voting for Trump is Donald Trump.
John Oliver saved our election with that great bit of satire.
Really liked it. But okay,
the show is great, but I have some. It's frustrating for me because I go like, that's a good joke. Okay,
but
were you analyzing it from a political perspective or a comedy perspective?
As a comedian, I think he's great. He is like, his show is fantastic, but a lot of times it's like with The Daily Show, I can recognize that Jon Stewart was an incredible comedian, but still go like, there's just something a little different with,
Different politics.
Of course, that makes sense. But my point is, I agree that not everyone that's voting for Trump is voting for him because they're racist, but I do think 15 to 19% of our country is so racist and so sexist, no matter what's going on with them, would never vote for a woman. They would never vote for a black man.
I think I've said this on the podcast before, but not all racists not all Trump voters are racist and misogynist, but all racists and misogynists are voting for Trump. And I think that is actually true.
It's like a Lewis Carroll logic puzzle, right?
I think there are racist and misogynist Democrats too.
In a different way, I think.
Not this cycle.
Well, there are more anti-Semites who are liberals, I think, and we can maybe get into that later. But
oh God, that's a whole separate hour.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
But it's honestly one of my biggest issues.
I know.
But
I know.
I truly believe that. But I think what do you think the most important word was in her basket of deplorables remark? Because I think there is a correct answer to
basket.
This.
Deplorables.
The most important word there was half, because that's where she made the mistake.
Well, you didn't give that as an option. You just said basket of deplorables.
No,
the half is what she apologized for.
Because the remark in in some, right, was the same tone of the way she has chosen to attack Trump, beginning with the speech in Reno.
Right, but let's talk about that. You're talking about the speech where she talked about the alt-right for an hour?
And that's what the Basket of the Deplorables remark was the follow-up to.
She did a better job defending traditional conservatism than any Republican has
done. You like that speech, right?
Which was her job. She was trying to win traditional Republicans with that speech.
Yeah, but to bring it back to the media, here's what was the most fucking frustrating thing, I think, of the entire election thus far, is Hillary gives an hour-long critique of the alt-right and the, like, worst part of not even the Republican Party, but the worst part of our country, or the worst part of Twitter, or whatever. Very detailed in how Trump is literally retweeting these people. Like, someone who has like 100 followers who puts up a Star of David and a pile of money, and Trump retweets.
Oh, it's insane.
Yeah. And she gives a very detailed thing about that. And then like the same day, Trump was like, Hillary Clinton's a bigot. And then we have to fucking watch the news that night where it's like, both sides call each other racist. So, you know, and like, what the fuck can she do? Like, that's why, like, if she wants to turn up the rhetoric, she did that. She did a very reasoned approach, and it got no coverage except for a false equivalency of both sides claim the other's racist. So for her to turn it up and say that, like, yeah, half of his supporters are fucking racist, I don't blame her.
But here's the biggest problem. The alt right now is no longer alt. It has now become the mainstream right, and it's not just in the United States. So you look at the election, what happened in Austria, right? This crazy guy, Norbert Hofer. I don't know how much you guys follow international politics.
Not following that.
But this was
that.
A bonkers election for whatever their head of state is, the prime minister, president of Austria, right? There were two politicians running against each other, very similar to this election. And you had this crazy, bonkers, xenophobic candidate, Hofer, and the election results were razor thin, and Hofer lost. He initially won, but then lost by this razor thin margin, and this is not an uncommon thing around the world right now. And Hofer does this similar thing where he's also pandering to Jews, much like Trump does, in this kind of weird anti-Semitic, not anti-Semitic way, because his daughter's Jewish. But it's kind of bullshit, right? It's not only here in America, right? You look at Hungary, the same thing. When I was in Hungary a couple years ago, you're in Budapest touring the parliament, and we were talking a little bit about the government, and similar thing. There are people there who are like the equivalent of the Tea Party, right? Mm-hmm. And there are not a lot of them, but they have very loud voices, a lot like in America, right? And those loud voices are now becoming louder and louder, and more of these, as you say, Pandora's box, or I forget the term you used before, mm-hmm. they're coming out of the woodwork, and it's very frightening.
So, which is why I think it's dangerous to normalize Donald Trump and to normalize
what's
happening.
So, Joe, we should talk to you about this. I mean, this is your party, right? And so how did we get here?
As of, like, May, yes.
Sure. Who were you supporting a year ago when there was 18 choices?
Or 60.
Can we guess?
60. No, that's all right. Well, we don't have much time.
we're doing it for time. It's more fun.
I didn't have a single person.
Marco Rubio.
Yes.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Well, he was the middle of the road, the bright, starry-eyed future of Republican ideology.
He's diverse.
He's thirsty. He's thirsty.
He was the one I was most scared of.
Yeah,
really?
Exactly.
I said that on this podcast in December.
Like, scared of from an electoral perspective.
If they nominate him, they might win.
Yeah. There was a photo of Trey Gowdy, Marco Rubio, Nikki Haley, and Tim Scott. Mm-hmm. And it was the most beautiful vision of Republican
three
future.
South Carolinians. As three a native South Carolinian, yes. I got to call that out.
It was the Reince Priebus's autopsy from last election.
Yeah.
Like, just really.
Wait,
like,
all those people are diverse except for Trey Gowdy. How does he get in there?
He was the only white guy.
But do you like Trey Gowdy? You like Trey Gowdy?
I don't know. Benghazi?
He looks like Slytherin.
He's got like a rat tail, right?
Was Jindal in there?
No.
So you keep Jindal out of there.
You need a brown guy.
In the primary.
You need a brown one.
Rubio. Rubio counts as brown.
I'm a good governance conservative where I don't really think that the Republican is like this God King that we elect to like fix everything.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And so someone who has been a proven administrator of the governmental levers. Rick Perry, I thought was very good. Christie, I thought was good at running a state. Bobby Jindal was an accomplished governor. You know, they all have their own quirks and differences.
But most people in Jersey didn't think that.
No. Well, Christie tarnished himself quite significantly between 2012 and 2016.
I have to say, I remember the four, maybe 5 years ago, Cody and Zubin Prang, our friend of the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Head writer of the Daily Show.
I have had some drunk conversations with Zubin.
So yes. Cody and Zubin used to have a show at UCB East, kind of the precursor to this show called The Topical Storm. Mm-hmm. And you were a great panelist in that multiple albums. But I remember, like,
I must have missed out on that one.
Well, maybe a lot of people did. That's why Nate Dern canceled it. I don't know. What I was trying to say about Topical Storm is I remember you were a guest on the show, Joe, during the primary in 2012, and you were put on the spot and said, who were you supporting? And you said Herman Cain.
Oh, my God, did I?
But here's how you said it. I'll never forget how you said it. You were put on the spot, and you took a beat, and then you went, and there was such the big question mark inflection, you went, Herman Cain?
Well, but that's what 2012 was. It's like, you know, you had the entire Republican Party. It was smarting from this loss. The party was really trying to figure out its direction. And so you had this weird amalgamation of, like, also-rans in previous years, and nobody really clicked in. So you could have crazy people like Herman Cain come in, and he was the most interesting part of that race because I thought he had some weird ideas. And, you know, he shouldn't have been president. He ran a pizza chain.
Godfather's is great pizza. I'm from Iowa originally, and they had Godfather's, have a taco pizza, which is very delicious.
I'm going to pitch a Vox piece right now. Was Herman Cain the pre-Donald Trump? A businessman shaking up from an outsider's perspective.
But you both hate Black. But you hate Trump. Yes. Herman Cain was maybe your favorite of that bunch.
I really regret saying that.
Well, I'm sorry I brought it up. I don't mean to hold you to that.
Herman Cain was a fun candidate in a year that I knew. He was my summer fling candidate.
So what do you think happened? That's the question that we wanted to ask you. So you liked Marco. Jeb didn't win because he was a terrible candidate.
Did you like
Cruz? I mean, were you hoping for Cruz in the 11th
like
hour?
Cruz. At the 11th hour, I was 100% like, oh, my God, I hope.
Is it okay to ask you who you voted for in the primary?
Yes. I voted for Ted Cruz.
Well, that was kind of your only choice at that point, right?
It's like a Hail Mary pass.
You could have voted for Kasich, right?
Yes. Here's why I voted for Cruz. I knew that election results were posted online by district, and I wanted to have one vote in Brooklyn for Ted Cruz.
Oh.
Like 100% sincerity.
You think you might have been the only person in all of Brooklyn?
I looked up my one voting district and my one whatever number, and I looked at the numbers, and it was like 7 for Kasich and 2 for Rubio and like 1 for Ted Cruz. And I was like, that's me!
Never has anyone been able to see their individual vote in a statistic.
And if anyone says that your vote doesn't matter,
you can go on the website and see my vote for Ted Cruz.
Brooklyn was like its own city. It would be like the third or fourth largest city.
It just got a little bigger, so it's Brooklyn is now ahead of Chicago.
You ever need a Brooklyn fact?
Yeah, turn to Zach Linder.
You need to go know where to go to get some pastrami. You let me know. It's in the right spot.
Answer that question first.
Because I also get frustrated too. That it's like, well, this is their only option. It's like you had 16 options. All the cockroaches crawled out of the fucking trash can.
You had a perfect storm in a lot of ways. First of all, it was a big field. The fact that you could have a 12-person debate on Fox and then still have four other people.
And Trump could be quiet most of the time.
Right. And it was, you had, once you got to the real debates with eight people on a stage, you could have eight people all competing for the same 60% of the vote, or one person competing for 30% of the vote.
And no one took him seriously.
And that's exactly true.
You didn't like Jeb? If he had a different name, would you like Jeb? If he had a different last name?
That's a good question. With a different last name, yes. I probably would have
thought you were talking
Jeb
about
Bush.
A shitty first name.
No, like, if he was Dave Bush, would
Dave
you like?
Bush, oh, man. Dave Bush would have been 10 points up on Hillary right now.
Yeah.
I think the fact that Jeb even thought, like, well, yeah, you know, another Bush should be running for president is such a blind spot that you can
I
never
agree with that so much.
Like,
I totally agree.
Nobody ever been like, yo, wait, yeah, all right, Jeb.
Yo, bro, your brother was terrible.
Your brother, like, listen, we think your brother was great, but no, the rest of the country may not feel the same.
Yeah, and but like, now, but now, aren't Clinton, we? Like, Bill had a very successful presidency. Yes. I mean, you might disagree as a conservative, but
on
most,
top of the desk,
but like, you can say what you want about Hillary, but like, and like, oh, we don't need another Clinton. Well, it's like actually, people really loved him.
You know, going back to what I said about not believing the president is some kind of god king that we elect, Bill Clinton got very lucky with the pre-dot-com economy. I think there was also a lot of smart politics during that era, and I think Bill Clinton was a smart politician. Once his party lost control of the House, he realized, like, okay, I am a different president now. I don't necessarily know if that transfers over to, like, well, if we elect Hillary, then we get all the... Then the 90s are back. I don't think the 90s are back.
No, but I'm saying public perception.
Oh.
At least he was praised, minus the Monica Lewinsky blowjob situation, was praised as a
I was
good
in high
president.
School, and that was probably praised for me at that time. So.
I think
like,
Hillary's
he got
better
a blowjob.
Yeah, no, I don't want the 90s back. I don't want I don't want the crime bill
we're
back.
We're not
the age
don't love the 90s.
I don't want ask, don't tell back.
No, I mean, but I think
Clinton was great, but I never want the past back.
But
I
do you guys think that was a problem for Hillary?
Forward.
Hillary has not established an identity of who Hillary Clinton is because she keeps trying to pivot to please, you know, whatever the group is that can get her elected. So in 2008, she was the white working class union candidate against Barack Obama. And then now she's swinging, trying to get back to the progressive.
Do you know what it is? I think about Hillary. She is just a really kind of middle of the road, simple person that's just like, listen, not simple, simple-minded. Joe just spit his beer out. I just
good old Hillary, simple Clinton, just trying to get it in that top
She
office.
Just wants to get the job done. She's right. Not good at necessarily public speaking or all the political parts. She wants to do the work. And so I feel like she is just being like, what do you guys want? I'm a woman. I know that I have a different standard. So just tell me, do you want me to be sick or I can't be sick? Okay, fine. I'm going to work through with pneumonia. Like, what do you need? What's going to get me elected? Like, let's just fucking do this. I want to fucking do this. And I have sympathy for her in that because that's what a woman has to do. I say what you want. Equal rights. We're all equal. No, we're not. The woman has to fucking power through and just fucking get the job in any way possible. Just give her the job. She'll do it. She's going to do it. Just give her the job. Come on, people.
Phyllis Schlafly, R.I.P.
Oh, God.
So, Joe, another question that we have for you is, let's say that Trump loses. What's going to happen next? I mean, our buddy Ryan Priebus did the autopsy in 2012, and that has been flatly ignored. I mean, do you think, I mean, will the Republican Party split in two? Will Trump be demonized?
One nice thing about this election is how clarifying it's been to those of us who actually believe some of the things that we say on the right. When you see guys like Sean Hannity who was never a great prophet of conservatism, God, saying, you know, just being complete media manipulators and just looking for power and influence and eyeballs and ratings. And then you see all the hangers-on that Trump attracted, like Newt Gingrich and Chris Christie and Mike Pence, all these people who were just like, well, if this is what it takes to stay in power and to continue that, you know, my job is to be a politician. This is a clarifying moment for those of us who actually think the things we think and are like, I think this is the way to make a better society, versus the people who are just interested in continuing the power that the Republican Party has.
Well,
what happens? I don't know. In a weird way, I kind of hope
Trump loses. You think it's bad for Christie and Pence and anybody who is attached to his stink?
Because a couple candidates this cycle have tried to be mini Trumps, to try to like grab onto his coattails.
Right.
There was Paul Ryan's challenger in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
There was someone else in Florida, I think. I don't know. I'm kind of drunk right now. But it seems like it's alt-right.
LePage in Maine, maybe.
But can I ask you, what do you think of Mike Pence?
He was a mediocre governor who was going to lose re-election, so he took the closest life raft off his sinking ship.
The job that no one else wanted.
Yeah. Except for Chris Christie. He really wanted that job.
Are you socially conservative?
No, but the older I get, I'm afraid I might be.
Oh,
meaning
really?
You're starting to disagree with gay marriage as you get older?
No.
And you think abortions are bad?
Okay. I don't want to talk about any of this. It's more that I think human beings are by nature conservative in just that ideally the things that conservatism tries to capture, which is that human beings are flawed but trying to be good, that doesn't change. And when you do have big disruptions to social order in a very short amount of time, it might be for the best, it might be for the worst, but the idea is that we're going to make these changes deliberately with thought instead of the passion of the moment. Mm-hmm. Having said that, you know, I sound insane right now, but I don't know, I don't want to answer.
You don't want to answer?
We don't have to talk about abortion because I think
social stuff is very, I think it's a personal thing for people, and I believe the best system of government is one that lets people make those decisions personally.
So make their own choice.
I'll talk about abortion.
Totally.
No, but,
oh,
but
wow.
my,
okay.
well,
you,
no,
you
I want to, can I talk about abortion quickly?
Yeah,
by and large.
What concerns me about the conservative movement and about the way the Republican Party has moved is that I feel robbed of a conversation about how to move forward in America because it's one party has a certain set of beliefs and the other party doesn't believe that women should have access to health care and that gay people shouldn't get married and that black people shouldn't be able to not want their kids to be murdered in the streets. And I feel like I can't have a conversation with Republicans about fiscal matters, which I do think that is something we can argue. And maybe, and I feel like I can have an adult conversation about how much taxes should be and how much, mm-hmm. You know, whether we should have TPP or not. But I feel like until the other party just catches up with social norms, I can't actually have a conversation and take a Republican seriously.
But I want to add one more thing to that, which is what you said. I agree with that, and I would have said that 15 months ago, but it's gotten much worse because that was the conversation we were having with the other 15 people running for president. Now we're having a conversation with a sociopath who has some sort of undiagnosed mental disorder, megalomania, sociopathy.
He's a narcissist. Did you see the thing today about his first reaction during 9/11 was, and now I have the tallest building in Lower Manhattan.
Oh my God.
Which isn't even right.
I mean, he said that on the day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The tallest building in Lower Manhattan.
I mean,
yeah. Wait, was that not accurate?
Putin has an 82% approval rating too. I mean, he must be a good leader.
But yeah,
he killed the other 18% that didn't like him.
But so. I completely agree with you, Cody. And that was that's been my frustration with the Republican Party for all the way up until 2015, when all of a sudden Trump rose. And now I feel like we can't even I don't know how to talk to a Trump supporter. And I have to say, Joe, like having you here, like you are, I think, a great example of a Republican that we can have a conversation with. And that's refreshing and wonderful. And God bless you.
We haven't had a Trump supporter.
Because it's getting harder and harder. No, I think Stephen Slate was going to vote for Trump. He was on the show.
So about getting harder and harder.
That's what she said.
Hey, a couple
Thank
years
you
ago,
for the levity, Zach.
a couple years ago, this guy, Charles Murray, he wrote The Bell Curve. He wrote another book called Coming Apart, White America, 1960 to 2010, I think. And it was basically that you've seen a change in America culturally in that you've seen the upper class, broadly defined economically and socially and culturally, start pulling away from the rest of the country. In church attendance habits, in income, in the communities they live in, physically, in the geographies that they are in. And that you're having an upper class American culture start really pulling away from the rest of the country. And so you say, well, how did we get here? It's that the ruling class of this country, the upper class, the people who are like us, who are spending our Monday night sitting in an apartment talking about politics and caring about it, is becoming very, very culturally far apart from the rest of the country. The mm-hmm. people who are spending this time right now watching two Monday night football games.
Mm-hmm. There's two on right now?
Yeah, well,
shit.
There was a 7:30 game and then a 10:20 game.
See, I didn't know that. I am the cultural
right.
elite.
I'm missing the Mets game for this.
But just if we're asking how did we get here, it's that I think culturally our country is forming into different chunks, and one chunk has money and power and status, and the rest of them don't.
And which one is liberal and which one is conservative? Because both of those chunks can be divided.
Hey, isn't Hillary for Wall Street? I'm confused, Joey.
No, but that's the thing that you have, you know, all of us are in the same group. We're all in that upper half. We're all in that top 15% culturally.
Right. But then how do you explain Bernie supporters? A lot of young college.
Oh, my God.
But I'm saying, like, I do think that Trump has grown out of the same thing that the Bernie movement has grown out of.
And it's the same thing. It's where you have this lower, like, 50% of people who aren't that engaged in the broader culture, in a lot of civil society, in economic prosperity, that are hurting. And then Bernie was saying things aren't great. And that resonated. Trump is saying things aren't great, and that's also resonating. Sure. So I think the divide of the next 4 to 10 years isn't liberal versus conservative. It is this top 10%, top 15% cultural group versus everyone else who's like, wait a second, I don't have $10,000 a year going into the stock
market. But the only thing that, in my opinion, the only thing that really separates the Trump supporters from the Bernie, like I'm talking Bernie bros, Bernie or bust, is cultural issues. Mm-hmm. That they relate on economics, but culturally it's like, no, I'm not racist.
I don't think Mexicans are rapists.
I don't think Mexicans are rapists. I don't think they're stealing my jobs. I believe in a woman's right to choose, and so therefore I'm Bernie.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think like it's the divide is they're sort of, if you were to take people who are not doing well, you can divide them in half and say, you know, half of them are conservative nationalists who are voting for Trump. Half of them are liberal populists who are voting for Bernie. And then I think you could take it's just interesting because you used to think that the wealthy class, all rich people are Republican, right? And now it's like, no, actually college educated rich mm-hmm. people are maybe more liberal, but it...
The Bernie fan base to me is almost as bad as the Trump fan base. I do mean that. It is the Tea Party of the left.
No. But they're.
I'm exaggerating. I'm exaggerating.
They're quiet now, and a lot of them are voting for Hillary.
They're quiet now. Well, yes, but that took a lot, right? It took a real lot, and I am very anti-Bernie, which a lot of my friends were shocked at as a Jew from Brooklyn, right? But I used to tell my friends, look, I always wanted a Jewish president. I didn't want one that was going to be as bad for Jews around the world as Bernie Sanders. Would be horrible. The anti-Semitism from that man was disgusting.
Wait, really?
Oh my God. And this is something that liberals do not understand.
Because he didn't give a blank check to Israel?
To understand the borders of Israel and the comments that Bernie has made about the 67 borders and things like that, and to understand how Arafat declined Clinton and how the last prime minister before Bibi, who I can't stand Netanyahu, by the way, but you don't have to be you can be pro-Israel and still be anti-Netanyahu, you know?
Right.
And mm-hmm. And the Palestinians are rejectionists. And they always will be, and they will never accept a deal that is favorable to both parties, never. And the things that Bernie was saying about, now to really get into the intricacies of this, you need to understand the exact areas of land that are being bargained, not just generalize and say Gaza and the West Bank. You need to understand the exact areas and even the topography of the situation, how certain areas are higher ground than others, right? And Bernie was saying things that were blatantly anti-Israel.
What did he say? Give me an example.
There's a certain area of land in the West Bank that he wanted to, and he was anti-land swaps. Bernie is anti-land swaps, right? And he wanted to give certain areas of land to the Palestinians that made no sense and would have created certain states that are horribly anti-Semitic, right? I am for a two-state solution. I am for a two-state solution, but it needs to, and Yasser Arafat declined the Clinton 2001 deal. I don't know if you can go on the Clinton website and look at the maps of where these certain areas are. And it was going to include a high speed rail link. And it was going to include IDF and NATO and UN forces on the Jordan, right? And you need to look at what that proposal was and what Arafat said no to. And then you can look at what Abbas said no to the last prime minister outgoing before Netanyahu and said no to that. And Abbas has said that is his biggest regret. And now you have the head of the PA who has very little power, right? And is a weak leader and also corrupt, quite honestly.
Do you think Trump would be worse than Bernie for for this issue?
I would much rather have Bernie to be president of the United States than a demagogue and a man who wants to be a dictator.
What about this specific issue, though?
I think Trump doesn't understand anything that I'm saying, for Christ's sakes.
Listen, right. Trump loves the Jewish people.
He's
Trump,
like, yes or who?
No one loves Judaism more than Trump. Like,
sure, he loves the Star of David, he puts it on anti-Semitism.
I mean, his daughter, who he wants to fuck, is a Jew.
Yeah, but that disgusting meeting he had with the Jewish lobbyists where he said, hey, nobody can make a deal better than you guys, is that right? That was disgusting, right? He sees people, he might not...
Jews make great deals, blacks all live in the inner city and have terrible lives. I mean, Trump knows...
Women should be on their knees...
But there is certain rhetoric, right, that fosters anti-Semitism. And anti-Semitism is not something we're talking about now in the country because this is very important, all right? Because we're talking about Islamophobia and we're talking about racism against blacks and we're not talking about anti-Semitism. And anti-Semitism is still something that exists very prevalently around the world.
Well, we're so talking about when Trump recently to Jewish
but you, to be fair, Trump you cannot every walk minority around, group,
I don't believe that he hates every minority group. I think that he sees people in terms of minority groups.
Absolutely.
And you cannot walk around Paris now wearing a yarmulke. I think
there's a lot going on.
Thank you for that. That's probably
a succinct way to put that. But so my sister teaches religion. She's a Catholic school teacher out in, I think it's the Flatbush section of Brooklyn. And a lot of her students, it's a Catholic prep school for lower income inner city youths.
Oh, wow.
I'm blanking on the name right now, which is not good. But anyway, so
I like was a lot of immigrant children for or?
Caribbean
right,
descended and Hispanics.
Okay.
But she said that in her communities, everybody talks about Jews the way that Trump or, you know, the white lower class will worry about Muslims, which is that, like, wow. Oh, they have Muslim friends. They know people who are in their communities who are just normal people, but they don't have any exposure to Jews.
Oh, wow.
And their only exposure is through kind of employee-employer relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. There is something to what Zach has been saying, and also with a lot of countries like in Greece, their Golden Dawn Party has definitely an anti-Semitic bent. Marine Le Pen's Nationalist Party in France, there is a little bit of a bent to that.
Le Pen is frightening.
Right. And so I don't want us to have this opinion that that you can only have one kind of like a terrorizing ethnic based focus in a country. I think
Hitler didn't just hate the Jews. He hated gay people.
No group suffered genocide except the Jews.
That was the biggest minority in Germany at the time. And
just as an example, I'm going to Krakow on Friday, right? Krakow is a city that once had hundreds of thousands of Jews. There is now a district in Krakow called Kazimierz. Kazimierz is still the historic Jewish district, and it is kept alive culturally by non-Jews playing klezmer music in pubs. There is now a community in Krakow of 300 Jews.
Not to plug another thing, but there's an iPhone app, Detour, that lets you do walking tours on your iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very cool.
And it uses your GPS to like queue up the
That's really
tours.
Cool.
My girlfriend and I last weekend, we did a walking tour of Hasidic Williamsburg.
Oh, interesting.
I used to live near there. You go south of Division Street.
Yeah, and so it walked you through everything. Weird, and it talked about the stuff there. I can't say any of the words right now because I physically can't make my mouth make them.
It's okay. You're drunk, so it's fine.
But it's really cool.
Well,
Brooklyn thing.
We have to wrap this up, but I'm going to touch on nationalism very briefly. This might take us off on another tangent, and I'm sorry, but I do think this relates to Colin Kaepernick, and many black athletes are protesting by not standing during the national anthem in games and are raising their hands in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. And Trump responded by saying, maybe you should find another place that works better for you, another country that works better for you. So I think this relates to nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is nationalism dangerous? You know, we're talking about anti-Semitism and we're talking about, you know, hating on minority groups or other ethnicities. And I feel uncomfortable seeing American flags. Like, why can't I say something is wrong with my country? This blind nationalism of being like, I'm an American, here's my flag. Like, why can't you say, but yeah, all these things are wrong and I think we should fix them?
I think it's more dangerous than it is not dangerous. I think it is dangerous to not see yourself as a citizen of the world as opposed to a citizen of the country, right? And that's why I am for things like TPP, which makes us a more together world, I think.
That's for TPP?
I'm going to say the unpopular thing and say I don't really know enough about it in general.
I actually agree with that.
What's TPP besides something that people yell at each other?
Are they anti-trade? Are they for trade? But, like, it's a what are the specifics of it, right?
I think free trade is good.
I take your point. That was a digression.
I think free trade is good, and I think that it's good to bind the world closer together. I think it's a foolish thing to do to pretend that people don't have some kind of personal identity with where they are and where they're from.
But we need to understand, we are not dealing, when we're talking about the economy, we are not talking about the American economy anymore.
We can't. As of 20 years ago and the internet existing, you cannot talk about, it's a global economy, one economy.
But I think there are
specific, yeah. I mean, you look at 2008, that was not a national crisis when Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns fell apart. That was a global crisis. You look at what happening to the economy after Brexit, and who knows what's going to happen when Article 50 is triggered.
You guys will talk about China and how their
TPP is very important for China.
Is going to collapse everything because it's going to happen.
TPP is very important for the United States relationship with China, which is growing much more important as this maniac in North Korea starts launching bombs.
I believe it's pronounced China.
It's China.
No, but who are killing us, by the way?
To talk about nationalism in general, I mean, I think, I don't follow football. I don't really know too much about Colin.
Yeah, we started this talking about Colin Kaepernick.
Kaepernick specifically. And
I know.
But I believe that he has the right to express himself, and I believe that other people in other sports and other teams have the right to, like, not stand up for the national anthem.
And I believe Black Lives Matter.
And of course, Black Lives Matter. But just in general, like, another anecdote is that Cody and I were on the Jersey Shore this week and visiting some friends.
What town?
We were in Normandy Beach near La Valette It was a very wealthy part of the Jersey Shore, and we've been there. We have some friends who have a place there, and it's fantastic, and we like the area, but didn't see any Hillary signs. I saw multiple Trump signs and Trump flags, and I also saw an incredible amount of American flags, and just, it sucks, because I'm a patriot. I like my country, and you know, I flying an American flag on July 4th is great, and our September 11th or whatever. And admittedly,
it's very sad that we just equated those 2 days.
No, I'm just saying those are days where you should express your patriotism. Right.
So it sounds like you think what's happening to the American flag now is what happened to the Southern Pride Confederate flag, and it became this racist symbol, right? Do you think something similar?
The Confederate flag was kind of racist from the moment it started.
It was, right?
I don't know if there was a lot of wiggle room left in the Confederate flag.
But
I'm just saying that I have no impulse myself to wave the American flag unless it is a holiday.
Yeah, we had a discussion about this because, like, my parents have a flag in their backyard and they're very liberal, but it does feel like this thing now where the American flag has shifted. Like, if someone has an American flag now, you kind of think that they're maybe...
Trump supporter. I think there should be an American flag at the post office. I think there should be an American flag at the Capitol building. I think there should be an American flag maybe even at a gas station and a fire department, a police department. But just a private citizen with a big American flag, I wonder, like, oh, that's probably a racist.
Which is a terrible thought to have.
But I will say that, like, a lot of the places with American flags in this area of New Jersey we're at also either had literal Trump flags or Trump signs.
Sounds like a nice flick.
I don't have enough of a point to make right now, but that's concerning that we've begun to identify the symbol of our country with one particular party or another.
But it's this rise of nationalism. That's the problem. It's this thing of, like, listen, I love our country too. Yes, is it the best country in the world? Maybe. I don't know, but I do think it could be better.
Yeah, but
I think
when
it
you
can
hear, when
change.
You,
and why am I singled out for, like, by being told by the major party nominee to go find some another country that's better for me, rather than saying, I respect their right to say what they want. And
yeah, for me, it's just,
like, that's insane to me. It's a suspicion. It's like, go find another country.
It's a suspicion of people like Sean Hannity constantly talking about how, you know, the United States of America is the best country on God's earth, created by God. And, you know, just like that kind of rhetoric to me, I think, is crazy. Although I will say, in the two conventions where Trump and everybody else just shit talked America and how fucking terrible it is and how we need to make it great. And then Hillary and Michelle Obama. And Barack
this was
Obama.
A bizarro election season. Yeah. This election season has been absolutely bonkers.
Yeah.
I love America. I don't mean to say that I hate our flag. I'm just suspicious.
I love it too.
I'm suspicious of those who wave it a little too boastfully. We have to wrap up. This has been great
conversation.
This has been a great conversation.
Bonkers, insane conversations are what we do best.
So thanks to Joe Burns and thanks to Zach Linder for being here.
Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you all for listening. Please.
Did I cook? Did I go?
I don't know what that verb means.
I cook, baby.
You got your catchphrase wrong.
We literally invited Zach over to cook dinner for us while Joe talked about politics, and I didn't see any dinner.
But this has been fun. We will do another podcast next week, and we will have a live show in 2 weeks, and we're going to try to do every week from now until Trump loses.
Our livers hate us, but we're doing it for you, the people. God bless America. Vote in midterm elections. There's one tomorrow.
Well, it's not a midterm. There's a primary. But vote
today.
In midterm elections.
It'll be today because you're listening to this today. Great.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.